This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Tuesday appeared near the front line in the eastern Donetsk region and pledged to push all of Moscow's forces out of his country. VOA's Marissa Melton has more.
On Ukraine's Armed Forces Day, Zelensky released a video address to troops from the Ukrainian stronghold of Slovyansk. He called the fighters real heroes and praised them for their strength and skill. Meanwhile, Russia reported that strategic sites inside Russia were hit by drone attacks for the second day. Russian officials did not immediately blame Ukraine for the latest shelling, but the new attacks came a day after Moscow blamed Kyiv for similar strikes on two air bases deep inside Russia. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Argentina's Vice President Cristina Fernandez has been found guilty of committing a $1 billion fraud involving public works contracts during her presidency. A panel of judges announced her conviction and sentenced her Tuesday to 6 years in prison and a lifetime ban from public office. The populist leader is certain to appeal. She called the judges a judicial mafia and denied all the allegations. Her supporters vowed to paralyze the country in a nationwide strike, and she will remain immune from arrest while she's an elected official. Indonesia's parliament unanimously voted on Tuesday to ban sex outside of marriage and insulting the president and state institutions. Once enforced, the bans will affect foreign visitors as well as citizens. They're part of an overhaul of the country's criminal code that has been in the works for years. Find more on our website, voanews.com. This is VOA News. Sudan's civil and military leaders signed a power-sharing deal on Monday. It was widely, though not universally praised, as a step toward a civilian-led transitional government and democratic elections. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
More than 50 Sudanese political forces, civil groups, and the military agreed to a framework agreement designed to pave the way for the civilian-led transitional government. The agreement calls for immediate security and military reforms, which include combining all militias, including the Sudan paramilitary rapid support forces, into one unified army. The move raises hope for ending continued clashes between pro-democracy protesters and the security forces. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum, Sudan.
The capital of Ethiopia's Tigray region has been reconnected to the national power grid after more than a year of cuts caused by war, the country's electricity operator said on Tuesday. The announcement came a month after a peace deal between the federal government and Tigrayan rebels aimed at ending a brutal two-year conflict and humanitarian crisis in northern Ethiopia. Former U.S. President Donald Trump's company has been convicted of tax fraud for a scheme by top executives to avoid paying personal income taxes on perks such as apartments and luxury cars. As punishment, the Trump Organization could be fined up to $1.6 million U.S. dollars. The guilty verdict Tuesday came on the second day of deliberations and the only criminal trial to arise from the Manhattan District Attorney's three-year investigation of the former president and his businesses. Trump himself was not on trial. San Francisco police cannot use deadly robots for now, AP's Lisa Dwyer reports.
San Francisco supervisors have voted to put the brakes on a controversial policy to let police use robots for deadly force. The board voted unanimously to ban such use of robots for now, but supervisors sent the issue back to a policy committee for further discussion and may allow it in the future. It's a reversal from last week's vote to let the police use robots for deadly force, such as by strapping explosives on them in limited cases. The vote generated some pushback from critics who said robots should not have that power. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
The suspect in a gun attack on an LGBTQ club in the United States that left five people dead was charged Tuesday with 305 criminal counts, including murder. The 22-year-old has been in custody since the rampage last month. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, December 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, Russia's president threatens to use all available means to defend its territory over alleged Ukraine drone strike.
The concern all along has been that while the international community needs to support Ukraine and needs to make sure that Ukraine has everything it needs to defend its own territory, does not want this war to escalate.
Officers who defended the U.S. Capitol honored with Congress's highest award.
Thank you to our heroes for being with us today, and thank all of you for joining us as we canonize these heroes in the pantheon of patriots.
And shock as Morocco knocks out Spain and Portugal hammers Switzerland for a place in the World Cup quarterfinals. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price says the administration is not enabling or encouraging Ukraine to strike beyond its borders. This after a brazen drone strike deep into Russia territory. Moscow says attacks on Monday killed three of its servicemen and wounded four, as well as damaging two warplanes. On Tuesday, a third Russian airfield in Kursk, which lies closer to Ukraine, was set ablaze in another drone strike. The government in Kyiv did not directly claim responsibility, but celebrated them. Price says the United States has not provided Ukraine with weapons that are to be used within Russia.
Everything we are doing, everything the world is doing to support Ukraine is in support of Ukraine's independence, sovereignty, its territorial integrity. We want peace. The Ukrainians want peace. The transatlantic community wants peace. What we don't want is a pause, because if we have a pause instead of peace, we know that President Putin will use that pause to retool, to refit, to regroup, and to, in all likelihood, go back into Ukraine with renewed vengeance. And that is not in the interests of a just peace. It is certainly not in the interests of a durable peace. We provided, and we are providing Ukraine with precisely what it needs to take on that battle, to defend against Russian aggression in the east, in the north, in the Donbass, precisely where the battle has been more recently.
That's U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price. Russian President Vladimir Putin has threatened to use all available means to defend Russian territory, a remark many have interpreted to include nuclear weapons. This as the Kremlin claims Ukrainian drones struck two air bases deep inside Russia. Hours later, Russia unleashed another massive missile barrage across Ukraine, striking homes and buildings and killing civilians. U.S. defense officials are keeping a wary eye on the fast-moving development. The U.S. Pentagon correspondent Calla Bob joins me from the Pentagon.
The concern all along has been that while the international community needs to support Ukraine and needs to make sure that Ukraine has everything it needs to defend its own territory, the international community, including the United States, including the Pentagon, the building that I'm in right now, does not want this war to escalate and turn into a war between Russia and NATO. And the worry is that if Ukraine starts hitting inside of Russia, then Russia will blame NATO, which is supplying Ukraine with different weapons, for these attacks. We were just talking about this today. Secretary Austin was out speaking with reporters, and he was asked whether or not the United States is working to prevent Ukraine from developing their own capabilities to strike into Russia. And he said the short answer is no. The United States is not working to prevent Ukraine from developing their own capability. But there have been choices made here at the Pentagon not to arm Ukraine with certain weapons that can reach into Russia. They want to make sure that Ukraine can defend its own territory and its own skies, but that they do not escalate the war, because that could be a serious problem moving forward.
Carla, you have a breaking news coming out of Iran. Can you tell us about that?
Getting breaking news from the U.S. Central Command, they have just told us about what they call an unsafe and unprofessional action by the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Navy in the Strait of Hormuz. Now, this is an area that there is a lot of controversy and a lot of unsafe and unprofessional interactions from Iran, pretty regular basis. This has happened more than just this one time this year. But in this particular incident, this happened December 5th, U.S. Central Command says that U.S. USS Lewis B. Puller, that's a platform ship, and the guided missile destroyer USS the Sullivans were transiting in the Strait of Hormuz, and an Iranian patrol boat approached them. The patrol boat, according to CENTCOM, attempted to blind the U.S. ships by shining a spotlight and crossed within 150 yards of the U.S. ships. They call that dangerously close. It was at nighttime. And so the U.S. has said that this dangerous action in international waters is indicative of Iran's destabilizing activity across the Middle East.
That's VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob speaking with me from the Pentagon. Law enforcement officers who defended the U.S. Capitol during last year's riots have been honored with Congress's highest award. Associated Press Washington correspondent Sagar Moghani reports.
Thank you to our heroes for being with us today, and thank all of you for joining us as we canonize these heroes in the pantheon of patriots.
In the Capitol Rotunda, which was overrun by Trump backers on January 6, 2021, tensions were still raw.
It is an emotional day for all of us, but you can just imagine what it is for our Capitol Police, our Metropolitan Police, the families.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi remembered January 6th as a day of horror and heartbreak and heroism. For Capitol Police Chief Tom Manger and Robert Conti, Washington, D.C.'s top officer.
It was a day unlike any other in our nation's history.
An unprecedented crisis that called for unprecedented action.
It was a day defined by chaos, courage, tragic loss, and resolve.
And the Congressional Gold Medal is a product of your efforts as guardians of our democracy.
Conti and Manger accepted the medals on behalf of their officers, with praise from Congress's top leaders.
Democracy lived on because of them.
We're forever indebted to them for their heroism.
Thank you for having our backs. Thank you for saving our country. Thank you for being not just our friends, but our heroes.
But in a sign of the still raw fallout from the insurrection and its aftermath, the family of fallen Capitol officer Brian Sicknick refused to shake hands with the GOP leaders, snubbing Mitch McConnell's outstretched palm. The ceremony came as a Democrat-led House panel rushes to finish its riot investigation. Its chairman says the committee will issue criminal referrals to the Justice Department, which has the ultimate say on whether to pursue charges. Sagar Moghani, Washington.
Companies exporting products like chocolate, timber, and palm oil will soon face tough new European Union regulations to ensure these goods aren't linked to deforestation. The measures are a first for Europe and the world and may set a global precedent, as Lisa Bryan reports for VOA from Paris.
Environmentalists are hailing the groundbreaking legislation endorsed by the European Union early Tuesday. It will, however, need to be formally passed by the EU's Parliament and member states, a move likely early next year.
Les nouvelles règles créeront un devoir de vigilance, donc due diligence.
European Commission spokesman Adalbert Jans calls the measure a crucial step forward in protecting the environment and Europe's green commitments. The draft law targets imports of goods like coffee, cocoa, meat, palm oil, and soy, which are linked to deforestation. Companies will need to show where and when these items were produced and verify they weren't grown on land deforested after 2020.
It can't be understated how groundbreaking this law is. It's really the first of its kind in the world.
John Hyland is a Brussels-based spokesman for the European unit of Greenpeace.
There'll be a direct impact from it where, you know, it will stop some chainsaws and bulldozers clearing forests, and it will stop companies profiting from deforestation in Europe.
Hyland says the legislation has drawbacks. Environmentalists consider its definition of forest degradation to be weak, allowing logging industries, for example, to continue cutting trees in many places. Green groups say they hope the restrictions will be widened to include other crucial ecosystems like wetlands and savannas. Greenpeace says it believes the measure may prompt other countries and companies to adopt similar due diligence standards.
So all these companies who want to sell in Europe, which is a huge market, they'll be forced to collect this information. And once they're collecting this information, you know, other countries, it's much easier for them to ask for that information too. And those companies, they'll want to have, you know, their competitors, brought up to the same standard that they are as well.
Deforestation is a massive and alarming problem worldwide, especially in the Amazon and Congo Basin, where forests are crucial for fighting climate change. The United Nations estimates the world has lost 420 million hectares of forest over the past three decades. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
In other news, Cristiano Ronaldo's replacement scored a hat-trick to lead Portugal over Switzerland 6-1 and into the World Cup quarterfinals. Goncalo Ramos is a 21-year-old forward who only made his Portugal debut last month. Moroccans poured into the streets of their capital and in cities across Europe to celebrate their national soccer team's historic win against Spain at the World Cup. Morocco defeated Spain in a penalty shootout in Qatar, making the Atlas Lions the only team from outside Europe or South America to make it to the last eight. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. A third round of peace talks for the DRC has ended in Nairobi, with no reported progress towards settling conflicts in the country's volatile eastern provinces. The talks are coming to an end as the Congolese government accuses the M23 rebel group of killing at least 270 civilians. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
The talks ended after a week of discussions between the Congolese people and their government on how to bring peace and stability to the country. The only agreement was for continued dialogue between the government and local communities. However, the chief mediator at the conference, former Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta, serving as peace envoy from the East African Community Regional Bloc, said this was the beginning of peace in Congo.
Tumekubaliana ya kwamba vita ya miaka 20 haitasuluhishwa na siku moja.
He said both sides agreed a 20-year-old war cannot be solved in one day, but said they must start a path that brings long-lasting peace. He said there was discussion about how there have been more peace conferences similar to this one with the government, and yet there has been no implementation of the peace agreement. He said this time around they should not just talk, but also implement what is possible. Among other things, participants discussed how local communities could benefit from mineral resources, which has been central to most of the armed conflict in eastern Congo. The meeting in Nairobi will be followed by more consultations between the Congolese government, led by President Felix Tshisekedi, and rebel groups across the country. The main rebel group, M23, which has engaged with the Congolese forces in fierce fighting in the east of the country, was not present in the talks. The fighting has been going on in recent days, despite both sides agreeing to a ceasefire more than a week ago. The government of Congo said M23 fighters killed more than 270 people in the town of Kisheshi. The United Nations said it received reports of civilian casualties during fighting between M23 and other militias in Kisheshi. Lawrence Kanyuka, the spokesperson for the M23 group, denies the group is targeting civilians and calls for the international community to investigate the deaths.
The DRC government, who speculated on the lives of people, 1 minute, 150, 120, goes back to 100 dead. But on those dead, there's no identity, there's no one identified, there's not the least known name of people. So that's why we said we need an investigation to happen. We want a thorough investigation, a swift independent inquiry to take place.
Kanyuka accused the government forces and other rebel groups of attacking their positions.
All front line have been attacked most of the time because the DRC government have another agenda, actually don't want any peace to happen in the DRC. So that's why the coalition forces always attack the M23. If it's not in the north, it's going to be in the south or somewhere. So basically, all the positions that are ordered by M23 always be under attack by these said coalitions.
The East African Regional Bloc said it will check in on Congo's dialogue early next year, with the next meeting taking place in eastern Congolese cities of Bunia and Goma. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Thank you, Mohamed. And the UN Refugee Agency warns humanitarian conditions are deteriorating for tens of thousands of Somalis in Kenya's Dadaab refugee camps, as unrelenting drought grips the Horn of Africa and funding dries up. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
More than 80,000 Somalis fleeing conflict and drought have arrived in Kenya's Dadaab refugee camps over the past 2 years, more than 24,000 since September. This is exacting an enormous burden on the local communities and refugees already living in the camps, which house an estimated 230,000 refugees. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, reports refugees, especially those who have arrived since the end of September, are in urgent need of assistance. It says shelter for the new arrivals is running out. This is forcing many to live in makeshift shelters with limited or no access to clean water and sanitation. To make matters worse, UNHCR spokesman Boris Cheshyakov says a cholera outbreak at the end of October has infected more than 350 people, mainly children. He says the spread of cholera is declining thanks to the efforts of health partners. However, the risk of further infection remains.
UNHCR is providing new arrivals to Dadaab with clean drinking water and extending sanitation and hygiene facilities to the outskirts of the camps. We are also providing targeted protection services for the most vulnerable to ensure their needs are met. Malnourished children are being screened and admitted to stabilization centers.
He notes the UNHCR also is assisting nearby host communities. It is rehabilitating boreholes, providing generators for water pumps, and trucking in water. While tending to the immediate needs of the refugees and local populations, he says the UNHCR and Kenyan government are seeking long-term solutions for this intractable problem. Kenya has been hosting more than 500,000 refugees and asylum seekers in Dadaab and Kakuma refugee camps and urban areas for over 3 decades. This is the second largest number in Africa after Ethiopia. Cheshyakov says neither voluntary repatriation to Somalia nor resettlement in third countries of asylum are viable solutions currently.
What we are focusing on now is to find ways for refugees to become self-reliant in Kenya. And that includes through education, through vocational training, and through access to financial services so that people can start businesses, so that they have a prospect as a longer-term solution is found to their plight.
In the meantime, the UNHCR warns its life-saving operations for more than 257,000 drought-affected people in Kenya is foundering for lack of financial support. It notes only half of an appeal issued in June for $11.1 million has been met. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is Science in a Minute.
Researchers led by the University of Alberta discovered 2 new minerals that have never been seen before on our planet. One of the minerals was named Elaleite and the other Elkinstantonite, which was named in honor of Lindy Elkinstanton from Arizona State University and the principal investigator of NASA's upcoming Psyche mission. The minerals were found in a 70-gram slice of the 15,000-kilogram Elaleite meteorite in Somalia. In a press release, University of Alberta professor Chris Hurd says, quote, "Whenever you find a new mineral, it means the actual geological conditions, the chemistry of the rock, was different than what was seen before," unquote. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We're bringing women's voices to the conversation on things that matter to hearts and minds of women.
Here in Kinshasa, campaigns to raise awareness against the spread of coronavirus are common, but getting that information to people who have no access to water, electricity, or money can be a challenge.
With strong opinions and expertise on things that impact and change their lives.
I think a big thing for me is just being able to say that when these protests are happening, does it turn around into policy?
From right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent.
It really was powerful because it showed what is possible when men and women band together and say enough is enough.
We hear your voices, women's voices, our voices, and add your voice to the conversation. Each week, right here on The Voice of America, on Wednesdays at 1900 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter. Next, an update on U.S.-Africa relations. President Joe Biden hosts leaders from across Africa in Washington next week for the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit. The summit will underscore the importance of U.S.-Africa relations and increased cooperation on bolstering democracy, fostering trade and investment, and combating terrorism. The U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit, next, this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the outcome of the highly publicized and tight U.S. Senate race in Georgia between Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock and Republican challenger Herschel Walker. The outcome of the contest will shape the balance of power in the Senate over the next 2 years. This and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition on our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu from Washington, wishing you a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States Department of the Treasury imposed sanctions on 2 employees and 3 subsidiaries of the Solway Investment Group, a Swiss-registered enterprise that has been involved in the Guatemalan mining industry since 2011. Russian national Dmitry Kujakov is the head of Solway's mining operations in Guatemala. He and his colleague, Belarusian national Arina Gennadyevna Litvinyuk, for many years allegedly bribed politicians, judges, and government officials to advance Russian mining interests. As a result of their actions in Guatemala, Kudryakov and Litvinyuk have been designated pursuant to Executive Order 13818, which builds upon and implements the Global Magnitsky Human Rights Accountability Act, for having materially assisted, sponsored, or provided financial, material, or technological aid, goods, or services in support of corruption, including the theft of state assets, corruption related to government contracts, or the extraction of natural resources, or bribery. At the same time, U.S. Treasury Department's Office of Foreign Asset Control, or OFAC, designated, again pursuant to Executive Order 13818, the 3 companies registered in Guatemala that are directly or indirectly owned or controlled by Kudryakov: Compañía Guatemalteca de Níquel, Compañía Procesadora de Níquel, and Mayanik. Corruption is a key vector for Russia's harmful influence, said the related State Department press announcement. These designations target an egregious Russian corruption network in order to disrupt its exploitative practices within the Guatemalan mining industry. As a result of these designations, all property or interest in property of these individuals under U.S. jurisdiction is blocked, and U.S. persons are generally prohibited from engaging in any transactions with them. We stand with the people of Guatemala and support the protection of their country's natural resources from external exploitation, said Undersecretary of the Treasury for Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, Brian E. Nelson. We will use our tools to help ensure that corrupt profiteers face consequences for stealing from the Guatemalan people.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.